Good evening. You're tuned to a special membership drive event here on KDNK Carbondale Community Access Radio, Glenwood Springs, Carbondale, the Roaring Fork Valley, and beyond. I'm News Director Gavin Dahl, and if you haven't yet done so during our fall membership drive, please donate to this nonprofit broadcasting operation by going to kdnk.org and clicking the donate button. We've convened a journalist roundtable, and for the next hour, we'll discuss the original reporting we've been doing, the stories that too often go untold, and the challenges we face in meeting the information needs of the communities we serve. My colleague, Amy Haddon Marsh, is here from KDNK.
Hello.
We're joined by Brent Gardner-Smith of Aspen Journalism.
Greetings.
Lynn Burton of the Soper Sun.
Hello, everybody.
And Ryan Hoffman from the Rifle, Citizen Telegram, and Post Independent.
Thanks for having me.
I'd like to start by asking each of you to introduce yourselves to our listeners and give us a quick bio. Also, share a couple of the headlines from the past few stories you've published. I'll start. I moved to Carbondale in May to take over the role of news director here at KDNK. I'm a writer and radio activist now in my 17th year on the airwaves. I'm a member of the board of directors for KGNU Community Radio in Boulder and Denver. My last job was running the Open Media Project for Government, helping local governments with their transparency efforts and operating the Colorado Channel, which is kind of like C-SPAN for the General Assembly in Denver. Before that, I worked for David Barsamian at Alternative Radio and reported for Boulder Weekly. My latest stories here at KDNK are an interview about the Proof is Possible tour airing tomorrow morning during Morning Edition, an interview about the New Voters Project talking to Colorado Mountain College students about registering to vote, and an interview with Solar Energy International about training unemployed coal, oil, and gas workers for jobs in the solar industry. Ryan, let's start with you out west, and then we'll move up valley with Amy, and then Lynn, and last but not least, Brent.
So I'm going to guess I have less experience than everyone else here, but I came here 16 months ago. I edit the Citizen Telegram and Rifle, serve as the Western Garfield County reporter for the Post Independent. Prior to coming here, I was in Salida for, 8 months, covering county government, school district, hospital district, general assignments, and that was really the first job out of college. I was a desk editor at the University of Cincinnati student newspaper for 2 years, intern at the Cincinnati Enquirer, which I won't go into it, but that's what brought me here, and so I can't imagine doing anything else other than this, so.
What are your last couple of stories?
Oh, let's see. We had coverage on the memorial dedication for a fighter pilot who was killed in December 2014, flying a bombing mission against ISIS. I've had a couple of county stories. I guess I could tease a couple things in tomorrow's paper, ongoing coverage of the Hubbard Mesa issue, which is a hot-button issue out in Rifle, a popular recreation destination. User conflicts happening, or allegedly happening, and the community trying to find out how to deal with it. So you can read that in tomorrow's Post Independent.
You also recently wrote about cuddling.
I did, several weeks ago.
Do you cuddle? Who do you cuddle?
I liked that story.
In-depth investigation.
I've been in some uncomfortable situations interviewing...
With cuddling?
Not prior to this. I can honestly say going into that interview, I was probably more uncomfortable than any other interview I've ever done. Very interesting story.
Yeah, people can read more on the Post Independent website.
Absolutely. Type in cuddling and rifle.
So Amy, you take over next, Amy.
Well, thanks, Gavin. I began my career in radio news in 2005 with Marilyn Gleason here on KDNK when we were doing Rip and Reads. But actually, this is triggering a memory of a radio documentary I produced when KDNK was in the Dinkle Building, and I produced it on reel-to-reel tape with an X-Acto knife. But that was like in 1996. Anyway,
classic.
Yes. I began hosting Valley Voices in 2006, and I was freelancing and then full-time here at KDNK 2 years ago. I have a master's in investigative journalism from Regis University, and I've actually been writing for publication since 1990. Recent stories from me, two from the Sacred Stone Camp in North Dakota about the Labor Day protests along the Dakota Access Pipeline Corridor near the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation, and then before that, one about the sex assault in Carbondale and comments from local women to the Carbondale Town Trustees in August.
Thanks, Amy. Lynn Burton, give us your background over at the Soper Sun.
Okay, I've been at the Soper Sun as editor for about the last 4 or 5 years. The Soper Sun is a nonprofit weekly newspaper that took up the slack when the parent company shut down the Old Valley Journal about 7 years ago. And so the Soper Sun keeps giving Carbondale a weekly newspaper, a weekly voice. And let's just leave it at that I've been in the local newspaper business since the early 1990s. No, 1980s.
And a couple
time goes so fast.
A couple of your recent stories.
Okay. One story is streetlights and safety for, you know, women. Could be anybody, really. But there's been a couple of sexual assault and one regular assault in Carbondale in the last few weeks at night in dark parts of the town. And the Carbondale Town Council is discussing, you know, what to do about streetlights and all that kind of stuff. Tomorrow night, the Carbondale Bike, Pedestrian, and Trails Committee will address the issue and eventually make a recommendation to the Town Council, which I think will be going to them on the 20th of September. So that's an ongoing story, pretty big. The other one is an ongoing story that could be going on for decades. The Marble Town Council voted 3-1 not to recommend wild and scenic status for the Crystal River. And proponents of wild and scenic want to have about a 40-mile stretch from Marble on downstream to be designated federally as wild and scenic to prevent any dams from being built. And to get that done, you know, some local governments have to say that we want this, including Gunnison County and I think Pitkin County. And the town of Marble says, no, we don't want this. So there's a 3-1 vote. But I don't think that the wild and scenic folks are going to go away. It's that happened, and I think they're going to keep at it. So those are two stories from the Soper Sun recently.
Yeah, thanks so much, Lynn. And last but not least, as we head up Valley, Aspen Journalism's Brent Gardner-Smith.
Thank you. I'm the founder, editor, and executive director of Aspen Journalism. We're in our sixth year now of work. Before that, I used to work at the Aspen Daily News. I've also been a reporter at the Aspen Times, was general manager of Aspen Public Radio, and once upon a time did local news for KSNO in the mid-1980s in Aspen, a long time ago. I have a master's in journalism from the University of Missouri. And before starting Aspen Journalism, I interned. I was the world's oldest intern at ProPublica for 6 months, 4 months in New York. I was in the communications department, though, not the newsroom. In order to go work for ProPublica, I had to go in as a FLAC. I had to go in and do communications. But it was cool to be there. Learned a lot. And so here I am.
Well, Aspen Journalism is really part of the effort to help fill some of the holes left behind in traditional media as we've seen newsrooms shrink. The longer that I've been living here, the more I've realized how important water is, and KD&K has benefited enormously from your involvement with the station, Brent. For folks who don't know, can you just explain how Aspen Journalism works?
Sure. I appreciate that very much, Gavin. It's kind of you to say. We have really four watchwords: local, nonprofit, investigative, and collaborative. So we set out to be really a local version of ProPublica. That was our ambition. I don't think we're quite there yet, but we wanted to be a local, nonprofit, investigative news organization that was also very collaborative. So the way that works is we raise money, and then we give it to reporters, and they produce stories. And then the stories are done in collaboration with other local and regional media. So right now, I am covering water and doing so in collaboration with the Aspen Daily News, but also happy to share the work with KD&K or anyone else. And our stories are all there, and they're free. So we don't charge the Daily News, because if we did, they wouldn't really pay us enough to make that worthwhile. So we just take that out of the equation, and we work on a very informal basis. There's no contract. It's editor by editor, story by story. So it never has to leave the newsroom. And because if you have to go down the hall and ask the publisher for $10 for a story, the answer is no. So We just keep it with the editor and or the news director.
And so folks can track all of your reporting at aspenjournalism.org, but also on the Aspen Daily News.
Yep. And also we've been posting a lot of our water stories on a website called Coyote Gulch, which if you're a water geek is a really great aggregated news site of Colorado water stories.
Amy, I want to ask you to just also add about our collaboration here at KDNK with not just the Rocky Mountain Community Radio Network, which is our set of partners around the state that do public radio and help fund Benta Berkland's reporting from the state capitol, but also Connecting the Drops, which you've been involved with.
Sure. Connecting the Drops is a collaborative project that we've been working on with KGNU and with Rocky Mountain Community Radio Network. And we air some of the stories that come out of, and KRCC, sorry, and that come out of Connecting the Drops all over the state, which reflects water issues that are going on statewide. We also have participated in live call-in shows, and I know, Brent, you've been on at least one of those shows, if not more. And that's, I think that's with KGNU, and I can't remember the other station that's involved with that. Could be KRCC. But it's a live call-in show basically about statewide water issues. I will be covering a water tour, valleywide water tour tomorrow, specifically for Connecting the Drops, and it'll be shared statewide.
I think that's a great idea for a show, given the east-west divide in Colorado, to have stations on either side of the divide, although philosophically not that far apart, perhaps, but it's cool. It's a great idea for a show.
Yeah, and it definitely makes good radio to have that back and forth and to be communicating live with listeners, too, on both sides of the mountains. So I want to talk about some of the challenges that we face in meeting the information needs of the valley. There are several beats that, you know, across our local media landscape, we cover as best we can, given, you know, somewhat lacking resources, you know, local government meetings, transportation, crime, energy. What makes even doing that stuff well difficult, and what are we missing?
I would say it's, you know, one for me at least, it's the resources, and it's something that everyone in media has to do, but that judgment call. What do I focus on? What do I give time to? I have it every week. This Tuesday, I'll have to decide if I go to a school board meeting or a local fire protection district meeting. And I, you know, I'm one person trying to cover four different communities, so for me, certainly, you know, the biggest challenge is not having enough hours in the day, basically.
No, I hear you. I think all the local editors, reporters, photographers, Brent, everybody else, you know, we face this all the time, every day, is that there are so many. This is just local government. There are so many different town councils, planning and zoning, you know, the bikes and trails. There's all these different local government beats and special districts like the fire districts and Colorado Mountain College and everything else. You know, there's no way that any of us can cover all of those things. So we have to pick and choose every week, you know, what do we really want to try to report on and what maybe we just look at the agenda and see what somebody's got going, you know, and it's just a real challenge. There's so many different things to, and that's just local government. That doesn't include high school sports, arts and entertainment, and everything else. So it's a real, real challenge.
One of the things we've been lucky to do is call up Rifle TV and say, if you guys shoot this, would you share the audio with us? So, for example, the Garfield County Finance Director just recently gave a presentation in Rifle that we were really interested in about the challenges to the kind of boom and bust cycle of their budget. And luckily, I just got that audio from Rifle TV, so we will be doing a story on that. But, you know, if we didn't have partners like Grassroots TV in Aspen and Rifle TV, a lot of this stuff, we just physically can't be there. But that's, you know, one of the things that community radio has done over the years is deployed more and more volunteers to go out and find ways to get at least raw audio back, if not actual reporting done. But one of the challenges here at KDNK is our program acquisition budget has been frozen for the rest of the year, just because we're trying to make budget for this organization this year. So I think that's one of the things too, is maybe we could be better deploying volunteers to do at least go out and gather some of that audio.
Sure, and I think another challenge I think is is connecting with the Hispanic community, because we don't. Ed Williams was the last reporter who was a fluent Spanish speaker, and I speak a little bit of Spanish. But it would be really great to have the resources to have either a translator or be able to hire an Hispanic reporter to, you know, make some inroads in that community.
Very few people of color in the newsrooms in the Valley. I mean, that's just across the board.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think, you know, either of these two problems that we've been talking about are unique to us, but they're certainly prevalent here. I mean, I experienced it myself shortly after coming here, and I can't remember what the story was, but, you know, all right, let's go out and do, you know, man on the street, what does the community think? Mm-hmm. And the first five people I stopped didn't speak English, or at least they told me they didn't speak English. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's certainly a challenge, you know. Do our newsrooms reflect the communities we're covering?
Well, yeah, this is Lynn Burton at the Soper Sun. And one issue, one big problem with any newspaper with trying to report, you know, Hispanic stories and issues, you know, the people say, well, why don't you print more stories in Spanish? And there's several issues with that. No, I'm going to say problems. First of all, I don't speak Spanish nearly well enough to, you know, pass myself off as bilingual. So I need to know what every word means in my own newspaper. And
right.
And so if we printed a story in Spanish, you know, and somebody didn't like it, and they came in and started, you know, wanted to know about it, I wouldn't know what to say. The next thing is, okay, how do you translate that story from English to Spanish? That's going to cost money because we don't have anybody to do it. And the third thing is that if we had two side-by-side stories in the Soper Sun, you know, both of them are, say, 500 words, okay, well, we've only got so many words we can put in every paper. And so what we're doing then is we're taking 500 words in Spanish and maybe we're leaving out 500 words in English. So there's a lot of different issues to consider, you know, if you're a newspaper printing stories in Spanish.
Even when you have Spanish language material available, it can be a challenge. I mean, Democracy Now! Puts out a Spanish language version of their headlines. Well, right now we already air Democracy Now! About 12 hours delayed from its original airing in New York. And where would we put those Spanish headlines? And how would we attract an audience to tune in just for that short amount of time each day? It doesn't, you know, there's some overarching challenges. I want to ask you, Brent, didn't you help Aspen Public Radio come up with some funding to do some bilingual reporting?
About 10 years ago now, we had two people at the Aspen Public Radio newsroom, and I really wanted to push it to a third full-time person. So we raised funds to get a three-year job, funding for 3 years for a bilingual Down Valley reporter. We wanted them based in Carbondale, and we wanted them bilingual. And it was a challenge to hire and retain someone who fit that bill, who was comfortable moving back and forth between both communities and able to make it on the relatively low salary we were paying. I remember, though, there was a great story that the first reporter did. It was the day that on Radio Tricolor, the Spanish language station here in the Valley, there was a discussion that, you know, there's a immigration checkpoint on Highway 82, and just a large segment of the community just didn't go up Valley that day. Mm-hmm. And this reporter was able to go out and talk to members of the Latino community about the fear that they faced, that if they left, they might run into this checkpoint and they might not be back for dinner to take care of their kids. And it was a great story, and it was done in English for an English audience, but with Spanish-speaking interviews. So at least you could, as an Anglo, you could hear what it was like to be part of that community on that threatening day. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's the thing about journalism. It's a beat-driven thing. It's you slog in, day out, and then one day the service you provide to the community is immense. It just skyrockets, and you can't parachute someone in at that moment on that day. They have to be there. They have to be on the beat. You have to make the investment in that reporter in advance as a community. And if you do, the amount of service they return to the community can be immense. The social value that they can bring to a community on any given day it's really an effective and efficient way, I think, of informing the community to invest in reporters. But you don't hear that phrase very often, invest in reporters. It's basically, how little can we pay this guy to leave his family in Ohio and move to Carbondale and go to town hall? I mean, you know.
Yeah, so just in case you're just joining us, folks, you're listening to a special broadcast on KDNK during our membership drive. I'm Gavin Dahl, the news director with Amy Haddon Marsh from KDNK.
Hello.
And we're joined by Lynn Burton of the Soper Sun, Brent Gardner-Smith of Aspen Journalism, and Ryan Hoffman from the Rifle Citizen Telegram and the Post Independent. You know, one of the things that KDNK does that we air every day during All Things Considered is the series of 4-minute segments called Immigrant Stories. And this is not just the Latino community. It's anyone whose family has been, you know, experienced immigration here to the Valley. So, I mean, there are ways to do this. And sometimes it does mean, you know, reaching outside of our traditional newsrooms to bring people in and tell stories. And that's one of the things I love about NPR and their collaboration with StoryCorps is you get these heartfelt, personal anecdotes that don't follow the news cycle. And I think that's something we could probably do a better job of. But at least we have that great production that we're a part of here at KDNK as one example.
It's a great feature. And it's really, I guess, based on all credit should go to the person who produces it, right? Because it's very much a...
Mr. Walter Gallagher.
Thank you. Just fabulous job, Walter. And obviously, he's brought so much insight, I think, and knowledge to the community as a whole through that effort.
So one of the other...
And Walter Gallagher is a homie. You know, he was born and raised here. And he's probably getting old enough to retire, but he keeps on doing it. So
he's got the right to ask everybody, so how'd you get here, huh?
Right. Well, from my mom.
It's also a good example of collaboration because is it once a month that he publishes in the Post Independent? Because he does a once a month half-hour public affairs show. It's just an extended immigrant stories along with the daily immigrant stories. And that story is also published in the Post Independent.
Right, right. That was actually, he did one with Frank Breslin, the former mayor of Newcastle, who passed away in early August, and that was just an amazing read.
Yeah.
Listening to Frank just talk about his life, it was like, oh my gosh, this was the Wild West when this guy got here. It was crazy.
Yeah, I love that. I love that access into people's stories that, again, it's not about the news cycle. One of the other things that I've been bringing up this subject about meeting the information needs of the Valley is, you think about crime. I think about this every time I see another story from our friend Ryan Hoffman from the Rifle Citizen Telegram and the Post Independent is we continuously cover the issue of drugs and addiction from a criminal justice perspective. We're a lot of our reporting is based around a breaking news headline that someone's been arrested or, yep, yeah, there's another meth bust or another car accident. But we so rarely get to look at treatment. We so rarely talk even about alternative sentencing. And that's something that I know, Amy, you've been mindful of, that we tend to sort of, unfortunately, fall into that tradition of if it bleeds, it leads.
Right. And I know that, you know, in the newspapers, there's the cop shop or whatever you guys call it. I've always called it a cop shop. And then we do the Eye on Crime. And before that, it was cop shop within the news brief every week. But, you know, there's very little about what's trending. And the drug use, I think, you know, nationally and statewide, there's been a lot of focus on heroin use. And when I was talking with Lori Mueller of Youth Zone for one of our nonprofit interviews last week, I think it was, we were talking about youth and marijuana and youth and heroin use and all of that stuff. And I thought, boy, we really need to talk more about this instead of 10 minutes during the fundraiser. There are also things like drug court. There are also things like, there's long-term treatment in the Valley. There's women's treatment, long-term treatment in the Valley. And I think that deserves as much coverage as, just the cop shop and the Eye on Crime. But it's hard to, again, to make time for that.
Absolutely. I mean, you just said it right. I mean, we talked, it was almost a year ago after we did I did a pretty lengthy piece on meth in the area. Will Grandbois, another editor at the Post Independent, did one on heroin, and we came in and we talked about it. And mm-hmm. certainly you had the ongoing discussion on detox and mm-hmm. and services here. And then, you know, one person leaves and mm-hmm. you know, silence.
Yeah, exactly.
And so it is a question of, do you find the time to, you know, cover that as much as you're covering the crime stories, which admittedly don't take much time. Mm-hmm. And despite what people will say about it, they are frequently the most read things we have on our website.
Oh, absolutely.
So, but you're absolutely right. Find, you know, making, again, that decision, what gets time, what gets attention.
This is Lynn at the Soper Sun, and just kind of this is just a good example of where news stories come from. And this story was in the Soper Sun maybe more than a year ago. Is I read an article someplace about this new kind of, I don't even know the name of the drug. Maybe somebody else here does. It's an OD drug. If you OD on heroin, the cops or the emergency responders, you know, they stick it up your nose or whatever they do, but it's really effective, and it doesn't take a lot of.
Naltrexone?
Narcan.
Yeah. Right. And I thought, well, that's kind of interesting. So I called up Ron Leach at the Carbondale Fire District, and he said, "Yeah, we got our guys have Narcan, or you know, we've had it not very long, but." And so we did a little article about, you know, how the local, you know, emergency responders are dealing with drug overdoses. And I hate to sound like this might sound like we're just lazy, but it was just a fast, easy, quick article to do. But it told people that, yeah, we're up on this, you know, just like New York City. We've got this this available right here in the Roaring Fork Valley. So that's what editors sometimes do, is what can we do that we can do? So.
I think we should take a moment to reflect that we are fairly fortunate in the Valley to have at least the number of newsrooms that we do, that there is, mm-hmm. that Ryan's down in Rifle, that Lynn's been doing amazing work keeping the Soper Sun going, which is this great asset for the community of Carbondale. I think Aspen Public Radio has 4 full-time reporters.
Something like that.
Maybe going on 5. I know they got grants to add an environmental reporter, which is great, and an arts and culture reporter. So it's one of the things that nonprofits can do, is they can go out and fundraise directly for a reporting need. We currently don't have funding for some desk at Aspen Journalism that we used to have. We used to have an education desk, a land desk, and a government desk, and it was great. I think we worked with local experienced freelance reporters and put them back on the street, back on a beat, and they turned up a lot of good stories. So that is one thing that the nonprofit sector, I mean, KDNK perhaps could appeal to its listeners on top of its regular appeals for some newsroom funding to do a deep dive project. Let us dig into crime, or let us dig into the Latino community and present a series of stories. Because we're all slaves to production, because, as you know, Ryan, it's like, okay, great, we're going to do this story, and then who's going to put out the paper while we're doing this?
Absolutely.
Oh, my other half will be doing that, yeah. So it's a hard challenge.
Well, yeah, and for example, I was thrilled that Amy Hen Marsh had the opportunity to go in and be a part of this Standing Rock Sioux coverage. In order for that to happen, for her to be able to go and spend that time there, that meant that I was pulling double duties on Morning Edition, all things considered. You know, it's just, that's how it works.
Thank
but
you,
we're a great team in that way, that we can cover for each other when we have to.
You let her out of the newsroom for a few days?
Out of the news kennel, that we
no
call
way.
It. So another big challenge is retaining talent. And I want to talk more before the end of the hour about kind of our big picture ideas for stories that need more investigation, what else we're missing. But before we get there, just this example from last year that I think you guys all know about, this, that the Daily Breeze, a paper in Torrance, California, was awarded a Pulitzer Prize for their reporting on school board corruption. By the time the prize was announced, one of the reporters had already left the paper to take a communications job with the university. So they showed up to announce the Pulitzers and the guy was already gone from the newsroom. Locally, you know, in my opinion, one of the best reporters in our region, Colin Susick, left the profession to enter the public sector. He left the Aspen Daily News recently for a job at Garfield County. I mean, more power to him. Good for him. I'm sure that's a good job. But the rest of us are going to miss his reporting now. So I just wonder if anyone wants to comment on the subject of, you know, retaining talent and how we can meet these needs of the news audiences without more resources.
Well, this is Amy from KDNK, and I know that we've lost a few people before you came on, Gavin, to because of pay problems, and just Conrad Wilson was a news director here, and Matt Katz was a reporter here several years ago, and those guys are climbing the journalism ladder. Matt is now an editor, one of the editors for Time Magazine, and he does some work for NPR, and Conrad is in Portland doing radio journalism. But I think cost of living here, the pay, I mean, it's a labor of love to work here at KDNK. Of course, we get paid, but it's, I mean, I don't think any of the reporters in the Valley here are making $60,000, $65,000, $70,000 a year. And, you know, as Ryan said earlier, there isn't anything else you'd rather be doing. But at the same time, I think it takes someone who is interested in the Valley, who's interested in staying here, and who can make it without making a lot of money. Does that make some sense?
Well, it's always been a conundrum in the news business. There's always been that you work your way up by moving through small newsrooms and going to larger newsrooms. I'm proud that I hired Kirk Siegler when I was at Aspen Public Radio, who's now at NPR.
Yeah.
And all you can hope for here is you hang on to them for 2 or 3 years and then off they go. I do think it's not outrageous to suggest that the person who's covering your town should be smart, experienced, and hardworking, and should be a professional worthy of $75,000 a year and $25,000 in benefits and expenses. I hate to say this because it seems so outrageous, but journalists are worth $100,000 a year, and they should be paid that much because they are good investment. They are efficient and effective about it. It's like the whole town hiring a consultant. Listen, go to our town council and objectively tell us what the heck is going on with our town. And don't favor anybody and don't fear anybody. Just go forth and do that. That's worth $100,000 a year to a community. But see if you can find a reporter between here and Aspen making $75,000 a year.
Ryan,
come on. We know you're down there styling and rifle.
You're holding out. We know. You're wearing these rags here.
Yeah. I'm not quite there yet. But,
right.
You're worth it, man. You're worth it.
Yeah.
Let's call Swift.
But another problem that's not unique to us at all, I was in Salida for only 8 months before coming here, and I don't even know how many people have gone in and out of that newsroom since. I mean, my own girlfriend did that. She worked at the paper there. And after driving over Vail Pass every other weekend the entire winter, we said we wanted to live together and no jobs here. And she ended up in PR. And she's not working 60 plus hours a week, making $24,000 a year anymore. So passion will only go so far. I mean, and I don't know anything about Colin's circumstances, but if I had a kid and was trying to provide for a family, I'd probably be seriously reevaluating whether or not I could continue doing this.
Colin did some great work covering Pickens County for the Aspen Daily News.
Absolutely.
Right. So everything he learned about Pickens County has just been exported and gone. Right. And it takes a long time to work a beat and figure out what's going on. So,
This is Lynn again at the Soper Sun, and I've been working for mostly free weekly newspapers since the early 80s. I had a stint at the Daily News.
Kind of a get-rich-quick scheme you had going.
Yeah, and it all fell through. Boring, 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 boring. I don't think most people don't understand that the local newspapers here are now, they're all free. You know, it used to be when I first got to town or the Valley in the early 80s, the Glenwood Post, you paid for it. So that's where part of their revenue came from. But newspapers now, you don't pay for it. They're free. So the way those newspapers make money is through selling advertising. And advertising in the Roaring Fork Valley is a really competitive business. Between the newspapers and the radio stations and some outside outfit from Colorado Springs wanting to sell businesses maps that they don't need, it's just a really, it's hard to make money if you're a weekly newspaper, at least Down Valley anyway.
Do you think the Aspen Times has a newsroom as big as it should, given how well it seems to be doing?
I don't know anything about the Aspen Times' financial situation.
Sensitive question.
Well, I mean, you're talking about a lot of full color, full page advertising from real estate companies, for example, and other
advertising. I mean, I hope they're making money, and I just don't know if they're spending it in their newsroom.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly couldn't comment on that either.
I've worked for newspapers that went out of business, and the reason they went out of business is because they, people wouldn't buy enough advertising to keep them in business. So,
I'm sure if the publisher of the Aspen Times is here, they'd probably suggest that it's not as easy as it looks in July.
Well, sure, and I mean we as nonprofits have some advantages that the for-profits don't, but they're also. At least for us in broadcasting, there are some disadvantages. I talked to a local business owner who told me that she did a informal poll of her customers over the course of a month or something, and that overwhelmingly her customers said their favorite radio station in the Valley was KDNK. But for her, her business is very focused on specials and prices and discounts. And that kind of language we can't do in our underwriting here. So she takes her ad dollars to commercial radio because she can say, come on down and buy a car. And it's not a car dealership in this case. But so that, there are disadvantages or extra challenges for us as a nonprofit station because we have to be a little more mindful of the language that we use.
Right. You were just already desperate before. Then the commercial newspapers just joined public radio and being desperate.
Right.
We're all desperate. Well, the reporters and editors are anyway.
Right. I do want to use this as an excuse to pitch for a second and say, we are in our membership drive here at KDNK. And one of the beautiful things about being a non-commercial radio station is we're beholden only to our listeners. We do hear a lot of Koch brothers and other big political money advertising on NPR, but we don't have that here on KDNK, and your listener contributions out there, dear listener, are what allow us to be independent of those other big corporate influences. And I would highly, highly encourage folks, if you've not become a member of KDNK, to click over to kdnk.org and check out that donate button.
Would you take a donation from a Koch brother? They're probably in the listening area as we speak.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that a donation or even underwriting is possible. I mean, for example, we have just a couple of quick examples here. I mean, we have XL Energy as an underwriter here, and we have covered that new XL settlement with Sunset Solar's perspective on that story. And we also have the Colorado River District as an underwriter to our river reports and aired, I believe it was the Wild and Scenic conversation where we certainly aired some criticism of them. So I think that our underwriters trust that they're going to get a fair shake, but I haven't seen a conflict with that since I got here. Now, my previous station, KGNU, where I'm still a member of the board, we have very expressly wouldn't take, for example, underwriting from XL Energy. But that's more of a philosophical kind of mission statement position, I think, than an operating revenue balance sheet kind of decision.
It's fair to say the KDNK newsroom operates independently of its donors.
Well, not only of its donors, but even independently of our station manager. I mean, I'll go to Steve Skinner and ask him for input on, hey, who's a good source on this story? And he's very helpful. But there's never once in the time I've been here since May where we had to go through him for prior review. And as someone who comes out of a background in student journalism, I think it's really, really important that you don't step in as, for example, a school principal and say every story that runs in our high school newspaper is going to run through the principal first. Because once you do that, then you, the principal, have to be held accountable for everything that's in the paper. But as long as you say we're going to trust our student journalists to be responsible and not go through prior review, then the principal can say, I had nothing to do with that story about sex in the locker room or whatever.
Not me.
Well, right. Also, there are times when I have gone to Steve Skinner and, if I have a question about a story or if I'm, I'm uncertain about whether to cover this or not, or I think he needs to know this ahead of time. And it's, I still get the same freedom. And we've always had that freedom here.
Out of curiosity, has anyone in not maybe your current position, but at some point in your career run up against that, kill the story, outside interest or anything like that?
I did a story once where the editor walked in and said, don't do that again. We just lost the biggest account at the paper. And I said, don't do what again? Tell the truth? And she sort of stomped her feet and rolled her eyes. So, I mean, you know, the pressure's on any newsroom. Doesn't matter whether it's radio or newspaper or television, what you're doing, there are always some pressures on the newsroom. And the only way through those pressures is to make sure you're right.
Right. That helps. Uh-huh. Well, there's just this is Lynn again, Soper's son, 510-3003.
Is that your EIN number? Is that what that
exactly?
Was?
Also accepting donations.
Always fundraising.
Advertising. Oh, anyway, there's just so many subjective calls that an editor goes through when they decide whether or not to do a story or run the story. You know, like, and this could be any town. Let's say you've got a grocery store and they're your major they're your major advertiser, and you know somebody complains that they, you know, slipped on the ice, you know, in front of the door and they hurt themselves, and they want you to do a story on how unsafe, you know, it is in front of that grocery store. You probably don't do that story. You know, this one person is complaining. If they file a lawsuit, you know, it's in public record, then you've got to try to, you got to do that story. If the manager of the store goes on a drunken rampage, you know, and gets a DUI and runs over four stop signs, you got to do that story, mm-hmm. you know. So it's just one of the many judgment calls that an editor has to do, you know, when they decide whether to run a story or not. So it's,
you ever been spiked, Ryan?
I was curious because I've never run up against that. I've never. We had one situation shortly after I got to Rifle where a local business owner charged with something, and I called him, you know, what, hey, what's your side of the story? Didn't want to share his side of the story, and proceeded to go over top of me to my boss. You know, I advertised this guy's asking me all these questions. And my boss, in a polite fashion, basically said, sorry about your luck. So,
nice.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. So, but no, I've never come across that. We certainly, at the student newspaper at the University of Cincinnati, had some pretty contentious issues with, and this was before Black Lives Matter and all this, with racist cartoons of the dean of the largest college at the university popping up, and he lost his job, and there's this whole movement, and we always said we were independent, which we were. No one was reading our stories, but come to find out, we got a pretty good chunk of money from the university, so it's how independent are you really? But I've never had the issue. I was just curious.
Yeah, and I'm really glad we got on that to that subject. I didn't include that in my kind of prepared range of stuff I wanted to ask you guys about. Just to, in case folks are just joining us, you're listening to a special membership drive event here on KDNK. We encourage you to give at what you can at kdnk.org. Click on the donate button there. Joined by Brent Gardner-Smith of Aspen Journalism, Lynn Burton of the Soper's Son, Ryan Hoffman from Rifle, Citizen Telegram, and the Post-Independent, and I'm Gavin Dahl with Amy Haddon-Marsh from here at KDNK. Before we go, guys, we only actually have about 15 minutes left. I can't believe how fast this has gone. I want to talk about, get creative here and talk about, what are some of the stories that need more investigation? We've already touched on a lot of this stuff today. This could be something you're personally already working on, something you haven't had time to cover, or think maybe a different outlet might be best suited to cover. Like, I'm not going to cover the breaching of any dams. I'm going to wait for Brent to do that. But for me, I just, one example is health coverage. It's bad and it's going to get worse. For me, that's been an even bigger challenge than affordable housing since taking this job. We've done a few stories, but I just feel like there isn't time to do the investigative reporting that the subject requires. I'd love to be able to get creative with sort of, you know, solutions journalism and help the lawmakers come up with something, because it doesn't seem like we're getting much leadership on that issue. Very frustrating one. So health insurance, clearly an example of something that, I mean, I don't know how many stories we tell if it's going to do any good, but we could at least try, you know.
Right. And I, you know, I agree, the stories behind the stories, you know, I feel sometimes like something like the Standing Rock situation was a real gift to come along. And I appreciate your letting me go for that. But sometimes it's just enough to, you know, put one story out on Wild and Scenic, or one story out on the overflight over the 27 leases that were kind of overlooked because of Thompson Divide. You know, I just I would like to see more stories on homelessness in the Valley and vagrancy. I've seen, you know, and how has this changed since the Grand Avenue Bridge construction? I'd like to see something a little deeper on the bridge construction and how that's impacting people. And also, you know, something that I would like to explore more is like the carrying capacity, not only of federal lands, U.S. Forest Service and BLM lands, but of the Roaring Fork and Colorado River valleys. I mean, what are the population growth impacts on water, wildlife, air pollution, and traffic? And I mean, sometimes this comes up when there are large development proposals like Cattle Creek or those that came up in Eagle County last year. But in general, I don't think this story is told. That's, you know, I have a lot more, but I'll let somebody else talk for a while.
I'll go really micro here, and one thing I've actually tried to do and haven't pursued it as aggressively as I probably should have, but the economic health in the western part of the county that has been so reliant on energy development for mm-hmm. decades, and I just remember thinking shortly after getting to Rifles, oh, we've got a new coffee shop downtown, we've got this, you know, sandwich joint opening up and all these businesses, and you know, we don't have business licenses, so go to City Hall, give me the sales tax licenses. Well, we have no way of telling how many were this year and this year, which blows my mind. Mm-hmm. But it's one of those things where you drop it, and then a month later, hey, well, no, I want this. Oh, well, we don't know. And right. But it's again, how do you find the time? And I wouldn't want just, you know, here's how many businesses, here's what our sales tax is compared to last year. A component of that would be, what do families actually feel? I mean, we've had this conversation on a local Facebook page that I've been tracking for the last week. And why do we have, people in Rifle are saying this, why do we have the highest utility costs of, in their mind, anywhere?
And given the proximity to so much energy.
Well, especially water and wastewater and the fees that were charged for in that. And there are families saying, my water bill was almost $400 a month. I was like, that's half, you know, or that's a third of what I pay in rent. I couldn't afford that. Mm-hmm. Like Amy, there's no shortage of things that I'd given the time and opportunity really love to dive into.
And the resources.
The resources, yeah.
Resources. Give us a call at 963-0139 or go to kdnk.org.
To give us resources.
To give us resources. Yeah.
You, dear listener, can be a part of the solution.
One of the things we've tried to focus on at Aspen Journalism is extracting local public data and then putting it online in a useful and compelling fashion. And that sounds kind of easy to say, but...
You are like ProPublica.
Well, we're trying in the sense... One of the things that's fascinating is there's so much local public data that's sort of kind of public, right? Like government salaries is a classic. Government salaries is public information, and people love it when you print a list of here's the highest paid officials in your county. But each county or municipality or special district tends to give you the information in a slightly different format. Some give it to you weekly, some give it to you monthly, some don't include benefits, some don't include full-time employees. And so you think, oh, let's publish this information. And then you find out, oh, well, this is going to take a lot longer and is a lot trickier to put in useful fashion. One of the stories that we've put online that's been pretty popular is who owns affordable housing in Pitkin County. And so they had the data, but you couldn't go online to find out, well, who supposedly owns unit 14C in my affordable housing complex. Now, at least you could. Now the information's a couple years old, but it was a relatively easy extract, but then we still needed to massage it, and you run up all sorts of issues about, well, what's fair and what's proper and what nuances make sense. But and then you have to wrestle it online and make sure it's searchable and easy to use and somewhat compelling. But that's been a very popular feature on our website. People wanted to know that question. So this local public data angle, I think it's a growth area in journalism. You hear the phrase data journalism a lot. It's just usually someone who knows how to work Excel. Most English majors don't. And so that's, I think, a real important area and can be real helpful for other reporters as well. So we could compare cost of water across the region and see if Rifle's really paying more and why. And right. So to call every water provider in the basin, that'll only take you, I don't know, a week. And then you can just not put out the paper for a week and right. You'll be all set. Lynn, what's the top of your story list? It looks like you had a long one.
Okay, well, it's not a story list. I think the question had to do with something about, you know, what I would like to report on if time and money and all that kind of stuff didn't matter. And this is, you ask, so I'm telling.
Please.
Yeah.
The dream stories.
Well, no, I would just like to personally look into, I mean, local government is really important because if you look at it, you know, local government has more impact on your daily life than state or federal government. You know, I mean, the town of Carbondale can tell you can or can't raise chickens in your backyard, you know. So I would like to know and look into not just in Carbondale, because that's where the Soper Sun is based, but all the local special districts and the school board, everybody else. Look into what kind of emails are bouncing back and forth among elected officials, you know. Are they trying to do business? Are they trying to get some ordinance passed? What are they doing anyway?
Yeah, that's a great question. When I was at the legislature the last 2 years for the Colorado Channel, we had to communicate with elected officials often about, you know, they'd put in a request for a clip and we would send them off something. And oftentimes I would go and the only thing I could find was a campaign email.
Right, exactly. And this leads to the second question, which I put to one of the local special districts just last week, one of the administrators and, yeah, two of the administrators. And, you know, they explained to me that if you're on, any town board in Colorado, you know, you can one person can email another one, you know, and say, okay, do you need a ride to the town council meeting or some of these kind of innocuous things.
Right.
But, you know, one elected official can't email the other and say, okay, how can we get this ordinance passed just between you and me? And when it comes in, so it's a gray area if it's just two people, you know, elected officials. If you bring in a third one, then you're getting in sort of into the realm of, okay, should this meeting be noticed?
Right.
Yeah, like a public notice that it's happening. And there's so much of that kind of backdoor, backroom kind of email stuff that goes on. You know, I would like to know a lot more about it, not just in this town, but, you know, up and down the Roaring Fork Valley. So
what do you think would happen if you, say, filed a Colorado Open Records Request Act for the email of all the Carbondale Town Council members over the last year?
Okay, well, this, my question that I put to this administrator for a local special district is, you know, how do you know, if you're a reporter or just a person, how do you know that the public document exists? You know, these two guys that are going back and forth, it's a public document, but if you don't know it exists, how can you ask for it? Jeez. So that's one of my big concerns, personally.
I know. At least two of the towns that I cover, I don't even think they have a town email service set up for their elected officials. It's, you know, personal Yahoo accounts and stuff like that they're using. So I'd be really interested to see you know, what a core request would turn up in that case where they're using their own private emails.
Well, some people locally, you know, I know this for a fact, some elected officials, they're using their own private emails, you know, to do town work business to try and get around the state's sunshine laws. You know, I know that for a fact. So this is the kind of thing that I find interesting. I don't know if anybody else does.
Well, and I think a lot of people in the open government side of things would say oftentimes this is simply lack of awareness or, you know, lack of infrastructure planning from local governments, but that doesn't make it okay. You know what
right.
I mean? That's the trick, is that even if you have a lot of faith in a local town clerk wasn't deleting text messages because she's up to something, it was, you know, it wasn't intended in a bad way. Even if you're convinced of that, how can you prove that that's the case if once they're gone, right? Mm-hmm.
It's fascinating too. It's still seen as a very hostile act to, as a reporter, use the Open Records Act, especially on a beat that you're covering, because the person, the source, may then just shut you down and say, "Okay, I'm not going to explain anything else to you. I'm no longer a source for you. You crossed a line in our source relationship."
Oh, well, and look at what the Obama administration has done going after whistleblowers. I mean,
right. And so one of the things about that is it helps if you're coming from a well-muscled newsroom. And that's what the thing that I'm most sad about in journalism is that the newsrooms are all a little weak and pathetic. Oh, we don't have enough money to pay you for gas to go to a meeting. No, we can't put you up in a hotel room. No, you better not file an open records request act because, you know, you're the only reporter we have. And if they don't want to talk to you at town hall, then where are we? And so, you know, there's just a lot to be gained from having a confident, experienced, well-funded newsroom. It makes a big difference.
Well, and David Simon, the longtime journalist who then created The Wire and other programs, you know, that touch on these issues, has said, you know, this is going to be the best time ever to be a corrupt local government official, you know, in this era. And unfortunately, no matter how hard all of us work, we can't be at every meeting, and we certainly can't get access to all these supposedly public documents.
When you talk about what's going on at the national level with a lot of larger papers, are they're going through this movement of everyone has to reapply for their job. That's really just a way to shed older, more experienced journalists who are making more money, rightly so, so that they can pay someone like me who's 25.
Good point, youngest guy on the panel.
Yeah, next to nothing. Which is terrible because for those of us who haven't been doing this, who do we go to and say, you know, I'm running into this issue and everything? There's something seriously lost there that someone like me just...
It's so true. The publisher walks in and goes, okay, who's making the most money? Okay, and when you don't publish very often, and when you do, you're causing me heartburn. Oh, you're the investigative reporter. Okay, you're out, right? That goes on all the time.
Right. Well, yeah. They had that, the Denver Post that came out where that they're now required to write one story a day, and they were up in arms, and I guess, you know, that big of a change, I can understand it, but I was thinking one story a day. I mean,
that'd be an easy day.
Yeah.
You'll be going home by noon.
Sign me up.
But you know what's been amazing for me since I moved to this side of the mountains? It's been amazing to watch how a couple of the sports writers of the Denver Post have been doing some of the most interesting political commentary, sometimes outside of their job. In the case of, I think it's Kisla, he actually writes about the political economy of sports in his columns, which is very unique in sports writing. And then another guy, I want to say it's Nick Grokey, but I'm not sure which. There's another reporter who took to Twitter to start kind of airing the dirty laundry of all what's happening with their union contract and stuff like that. And so it's so exciting to watch from here Denver sports writers kind of leading the charge on a lot of these sort of worker protections for journalists. Not necessarily the camp you'd expect to get it out of. Well, I think we're out of time, guys. We should probably have to wrap up. I just want to thank everybody for being here. Amy Haddon Marsh, my colleague from KDNK, Brent Gardner-Smith from Aspen Journalism, Lynn Burton from the Soper Sun, and Ryan Hoffman from the Rifle Citizen Telegram and the Post Independent. I think maybe one of the biggest questions that we didn't get to was, what exactly are the information needs of the Valley? So we hope to keep this conversation going, folks. You can do that not only by donating to KDNK and keeping the lights on so we can keep doing reporting here at this valuable community treasure that is independent media and this radio station, but also through our news inbox. I hope you guys will, if you're listening out there and you have more thoughts you want to share. We didn't make this a call-in show just because I didn't think we'd have time, and maybe that would have been more fun. We certainly could have had a better opportunity to have more diversity in the room if we had done that. But we'll do this again. And I mean, I know for Amy and me, we're sitting here scribbling notes to each other about how much fun we're having talking to you guys, and hope we can do this again. Thanks so much, everybody. Last word, anybody?
Well, what is your email at the newsroom at KDNK?
news@kdnk.org.
Cool.
Or Amy, A-M-Y, at kdnk.org. And I have one word for all of us. It's collaboration. I would like to see more collaboration between print journalists and radio journalists in the Valley.
You know, my best conversations with people are when they figure out what Aspen journalism is and they get their mind around the model, a little light bulb goes on. They look at me and say, you know what you ought to look into? That's the sweet moment. So,
it happened right here today.
Yeah. So I would encourage anyone to... If they've ever said, you know what you ought to look into, go ahead and email the newsroom at KDNK. We'll put these hardworking journalists on the case.
Yeah, and it's really a pleasure to get to sit down with you guys, because again, I just want to give huge shout outs to these reporters in the room here, because their work is what's keeping so many of us informed. And whether it's the weekly take from the Soper Sun, the special kind of feature reporting that Aspen Journalism does, or the grind, man, the daily grind that is going on in Rifle and Glenwood from Ryan, I just so appreciate you guys. And of course, everybody in public radio knows historically print journalism has been the source of a lot of the content that comes out on radio and TV. I know, I think John Oliver just recently did a thing on his HBO program where he showed examples of so many TV reports that begin with, according to Bloomberg, according to the Washington Post, according to your half of what you see on TV news is just rip and read from print journalists.